So we recorded interviews with all the leadership of the Taliban back in 1995.
That's fascinating. And if you recorded interviews with them in that year, what were their goals markedly different then than they seem appear to be now?
Yeah, I mean, we use the word Taliban to describe what I would call a conservative Pashtun elements in the South. But at that time, there was warlordism everywhere in Afghanistan, and particularly along the border in the south, and people made their money by stopping convoys and then either charging bribes or pillaging or raping or doing whatever they wanted to do to the people that passed. And the Talibs at that time rose up and began to move from town to town to town. Now, naturally, they were supported by Pakistan, but they were welcomed by the Afghans until they got to Kabul. And, you know, Kabul is a very cosmopolitan place, and there was also some ethnic problems because the Taliban were Pashtun and sort of a weird cult. They weren't traditional Pashtuns, but the Pashtuns that had grown up in Pakistan. When they got into Kabul, they began to crack down on what they thought the excesses of the westernized Afghans in Kabul were doing. They got into a shouting match with the UN and the other NGO organizations about them living in mansions, and things began to fall apart. When they got into the north, they became very brutal and started killing people. So they basically ran out of steam about the time that September 11th came about. They were really hurting because they'd been strangled money-wise, and they were really not welcome in the north. But the south still is strongly conservative and still views the Taliban as the correct way to sort of clean up the excesses and the influence of the West.
So there has then been a gigantic change in them in these years.
Well, a lot of people don't know that the Taliban is actually a Pakistani movement. If you look at a map of Pakistan and Afghanistan, and you look at that border, the Durand Line, it runs right smack through the Pashtun ethnic groups. Pakistan is terrified that if it loses control of or the support of the Pashtun elements, it then becomes a very small Punjabi state. So they are very eager to control and to gain favor amongst the Pashtun elements. Most of the people we killed after 9/11 in Afghanistan, and I was with a special forces team at that time, were Pakistanis. They were killed 500 at a time, 600 at a time, 300 at a time. Because they were left behind, and the Afghans all went home. What you're seeing now is a number of Pakistani jihadis going into the southern part of Afghanistan and supporting some of the more radical Pashtun elements.
Is it your view, Robert, that that's where Osama still is on that border someplace?
Yeah, I spent some time looking for Osama. In 1996, I was down the road from him in a place called Jalalabad when he was in Tora Bora. And he moved around and everybody knew where he was. These days, there's really only one place he can be, and that is under the protection of the Pakistani ISI, which is their intelligence services, somewhere in the tribal areas, in an area between Chitral, which is the northern part, and sort of down south towards Miram Shah and Quetta. For example, Mullah Omar, who is still wanted by U.S. forces, lives openly in Quetta, which is a southern Pakistani town. Mullah Dadla, who's the head of the military, moves between Quetta and Uruzgan province, where he's from. So there's a very concerted effort by the Pakistanis to keep foreigners out of Quetta because of the number of Talibs that are there.
We're all very concerned. I am, of course, very much aware, and of course Pakistan has the bomb. In your opinion, Robert, is there any chance that one of these bombs that Pakistan has can make its way one way or the other into the hands of the Taliban?
Well, the Taliban have a hard time shooting AK-47s. I don't know how successful they would be with a nuclear weapon. If you know anything about nuclear weapons, they don't have a big red button like in James Bond that you push and they blow up. Plus, there's really nowhere to use it. If the Talibs were to be successful, it's really through a hearts and minds campaign, by being sympathetic to the people and supporting them against what they consider to be outside elements. the Pakistanis' use of missiles, in other words, the nuclear warheads that are on these short-range missiles, is really a deterrent to India's use of missiles. And mm-hmm. they have parades where they take big papier-mâché missiles and parade them around the streets and sort of wave their fists at India, and India does the same thing. We always look at the problem being in Afghanistan, but actually the problem is between India and Pakistan. And the whole concept of jihadis, in other words, training foreigners to go fight in a foreign country, began in Pakistan in their war in Kashmir against India. And Osama bin Laden just tapped into that concept during the Soviet war with Afghanistan. And, of course, we pumped in $3 billion and the Saudis pumped in $3 billion, and we created this sort of hardcore, heavy-duty machine of training people to go fight and die in another person's country, and that became the genesis of what formed 9/11.
Here's a question that I'm not sure you can answer. I'm sure that our own government is struggling with this, but since all the pounding that we've done in Afghanistan post 9/11, how strong is the Taliban? How much did we hurt them, and what is their current state of readiness?
Well, having been inside Afghanistan before 9/11, and having a very good knowledge of the Taliban and knowing most of the commanders, it was kind of humorous to me, because before 9/11, they had exactly two operating jet aircraft fighters. They had two Sukhois that they used to fly out of Kabul to bomb Massoud's people. They had a number of Antonov transport planes. And that was it. And they had a few tanks here and there. But when we, quotation mark, wiped out the Talibs, all they did is go back home. So in the first stage of the war, the first 2 to 4 weeks of the war, there were some initial airstrikes. The Afghans consisted of southern Pashtuns who had been airlifted into Kunduz, the northern part, and local people who had been forced or paid to fight for the Taliban. As soon as the Taliban began retreating, these Afghans became our friends, and the Talibs melted into the south. Mm-hmm. Now, today what you're seeing are essentially young, unemployed Pakistanis and Pashtuns fighting a low-level insurgency against NATO forces and ISAF forces. It's not really a war that we would see it, but if you remember how the British were attacked in Afghanistan in the 1700s, these are basically hit-and-run attacks. But it obviously creates instability. Most of the funding for that comes from the opium business, which is essentially a Pakistani-run business.